And just to catch you up, last week in Mark chapter 9, it was the story of the Transfiguration. If you remember that story of the Transfiguration where Jesus led three of his disciples up on the mountain. He took Peter and James and John with him. And what they experienced up on that mountain was the glory of God. And John Hamby, he writes, being transfigured means that Jesus became on the outside what he was on the inside. I thought that was beautiful. Wish I used that last week, but there we go. I just found it this week. So there you go. So Peter and James and John, they're up there and they see Jesus transformed, transfigured in front of them. They see the radiance of God just shining forth through him. And also while they're on the mountain, they experience Moses and Elijah and Jesus, all three of them in perfect harmony. And up on that mountain, they heard the voice of God. This is my son, whom I love. Listen to him. That's what we talked about last week. That was a great mountaintop experience. Now, meanwhile, the other nine disciples, they were down the valley, and it wasn't going so well for them. They are experiencing a father that's hurting, a son that is suffering, and a crowd that is arguing with the disciples. Let me pick up the text here in Mark chapter 9, verse 14. When they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them and the teachers of the law arguing with them. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed. They were amazed with wonder, and they ran to greet him. What are you arguing with them about? He asked. Jesus said, what are you arguing about? It goes on in verse 17. A man in the crowd answered, Teacher, I brought my son who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of his speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth. He gnashes his teeth. He becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not. So this is where we're at today. While three of the disciples were witnessing Jesus' majesty, the world was witnessing nine disciples that could do nothing. Nothing. And where that led, they're all arguing amongst each other. The scribes were there. The crowd was there. They're all arguing. That's what it tells us in verse 14. And I wrote it here. Followers of Jesus are called to live within a world that is out of whack. I mean, the world is crazy, right? This is the world that God has called us to. And he's called us to make it. You and I, he's called you and I, his disciples, the people who are following Jesus, he's called us to make a difference. We are to be the salt and the light in this world. And that's not an easy thing to do. And in many ways, we're not doing it very well. Kevin Young, he has an article out there, Seven Ways to Do Political Punditry Wrong in a Polarized World. So a lot of satire here. And three things that stood out to me. He says, always defend your side no matter what. Okay, you want to not be salt and light? That's how you do it. Defend your position no matter what. Be quick to demonize opponents on the other side. And go public with your thoughts when you are most hurt and most angry. There you go. That's a way not to be salt and light, okay? And we're not focused on being salt and light. We're just wanting to argue with people. We don't want to argue. It's just that's the default position. That's what happens because of our inability to meet the world's needs. So we go from the mountaintop experience to the pits. That's where we're at today. We're in the valley. And I've got a bunch of observations today. One of the things I want you to notice at the beginning with here, the ugliness of the demonic. It talks about this boy that the spirit has robbed him of a speech. Verse 18 says, whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. That's what this demon does. It throws this boy to the ground. And those words, throw to the ground, literally means rips him to pieces. That's a word that this father is using to describe what's going on with this boy. He's being ripped to pieces by the spirit. That puts in an image in my head, like a wild animal that gets a hold of its prey and just rips it to pieces. That's what's going on here. That's what the spirit is doing to this boy. And in Mark, he doesn't leave it there. Verse 18, it says he foams at the mouth, he gnashes at the teeth, he becomes rigid. Verse 20 says, when the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into convulsions. And he fell to the ground and he rolled around foaming at the mouth. Verse 26, the spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and it finally came out after Jesus commanded that. But Mark just won't let this go. He's trying to paint a picture. He wants you to see what these demons do to people. And that's so important for us to see, because Satan is constantly whispering in our ears and we're buying it. We're listening. We don't see what he's out to do. We don't see how he's trying to destroy our lives. What he's doing to that boy, he wants to do to you. You need to see that. And don't play around with sin. This is where it leads. Satan would love to rip you apart. That's what he wants to do. So you notice the ugliness of sin, the ugliness of these demons, what they're doing. But it really, a big focus here is the powerlessness of the disciples. The father tells Jesus, I asked your disciples to help, but they could do nothing. Now, up to this point, the disciples were famous for casting out demons. Jesus gave them the ability to cast out demons. They've gone on mission trips. They've cast out demons. Everybody knows they can cast out demons. They're famous for this. But when this guy shows up with his son, all nine of them tried, and all nine of them failed. And this is their first failure recorded at driving out demons. They'd been given authority to drive out demons back in Mark chapter 3, verse 14, and Mark chapter 6 talks about Jesus, he sent out the 12, he gave them authority to drive out demons, and they had been successful at driving out demons. Why can they not drive out this demon? What's the problem? We'll talk about that in a second here. But another thing I want you to see here is the disappointment of Jesus. Verse 19, O unbelieving generation, Jesus replied, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? And I just feel Jesus saying, I just can't take it anymore. And I can understand this. After the mountaintop experience he just had, best day ever, and the next day this, and he can't stand it anymore. Lord, take me home. And I see when he says, oh, unbelieving generation, how long shall I put up with you? That's right out of Psalm 95, verse 10. He's quoting Psalm 95. And Psalm 95 is talking about the faithlessness of the Israelites. After all God had done for them, God sent 10 plagues to deliver them out of Egypt. He destroyed the whole Egyptian army. He showed himself to them through a pillar of fire and a cloud by day. All these things. There's no water out here. He gives water to them out of a rock. They start complaining about food. Well, here's manna from heaven. And they complained and they complained and they complained. And they were faithless. Numbers 4, verse 11. How long will this people despise me? How long will they not believe in me in spite of all the signs that I've done among them? And is that not what's going on with disciples? Is that Jesus has shown himself to the disciples over and over and over. And the disciples, at this point, the disciples are starting to act just like the Israelites in the wilderness. At the top of the mountain, he radiated glory. At the bottom of the mountain, he moaned and groaned. When we fail to trust him, we're stabbing him in the heart. This frustration, when he says, oh, unbelieving generation, he's not talking to the scribes, he's not talking to the crowds. I think he's talking to the disciples. They were powerless. They couldn't help the father. They couldn't help the boy. They didn't handle the crowd so well either. Another thing I want you to see here is the hopelessness of the father. The man in the crowd said, teacher, I brought you my son who is possessed by a spirit. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, and they could not. The father was like, can nobody help me? Anybody? All right, so what do you do when you're overwhelmed by a generation that is just wicked and faithless and ugly? The whole human race seems to be falling apart. What do you do? I would tell you, my answer is you do what Jesus did. Jesus says, oh, unbelieving generation, How long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me. That's what we should do. Bring people to Jesus. One at a time. Just one at a time. And when you're exasperated, when you're frustrated by all of humanity on this earth, you bring God's grace to one person at a time. One person at a time. And Jesus helps one boy. And in the process of helping the one boy, he helps a desperate father. And then later he turns his attention to disciples and he uses it as a teaching moment to disciples. I'm telling you, you and I, we need to learn right there from that. That's how Jesus did it. So when we get frustrated, what do? We grab somebody who needs the grace of God and we minister to them and we do the best we can there. This whole chapter is about unbelief. There's four unbeliefs. The scribes in the beginning, we didn't talk about that. That's kind of in the background. And the crowd that's amazed at, you know, at Jesus, but they're not following Jesus. They still don't believe. But the real focus is on this father and on the disciples. The boy's father, he doubts Jesus' ability to do a miracle. We're going to get to the point where he says, if you can do anything. And for people like him, you know, prayer is just, you know, it's like crossing your fingers. It's like knocking on wood. There's really no faith in it, but, you know, anything. And the disciples, their unbelief, they knew that Jesus had the power. They knew that Jesus had given them the power and the authority to cast out demons. But when it wasn't working, it didn't occur to them to seek help from God. They just kept trying. Well, you try, James. You try, John. You try, Thomas. You try. Nobody went to Jesus. No, they didn't go to Jesus. I want to talk about Jesus and the Father here. Jesus the Father. It says, Jesus asked the boy's father, how long has he been like this? From childhood, he answered. It has often thrown him into the fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. If you can, Jesus said, everything is possible for him who believes. A couple things I want you to see here. That Jesus asked a couple questions. In doing this, he's dragging it out. I think he's very intentional about this here. And it's weird to me. Because when a demon is attacking and you see a boy rolling on the ground, it doesn't seem like the right time for a conversation. You know, you kind of expect Jesus, heal now, now. We need a healing now. And Jesus wants to have a conversation. How long? How long has this been going on? Like, what does that matter? Does that matter how long it's been going on? Is there a statute of limitations to driving out demons? Does Jesus need more information before he can bring a healing? No. So why is he dragging this out? And the father answers, verse 21, from childhood, he answered, it's often thrown him into the fire or water to try to kill him. And the father says, but if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. The man says, if you can do anything. Why if? And the reason he says if is because the nine disciples had already tried and failed. And I think this is interesting. This is the classic mistake. It happens in today's world all the time, that Jesus is being judged based on his disciples. People are judging what Jesus can do based on what you and I can do, what you and I do. People judge Jesus by the weakness of his followers. Common mistake. People lose faith in God because of the failures of God's people. You hear, you know, the people of the church failed me. The people, you know, they couldn't help me. They didn't do anything. They don't love me. And all of a sudden they start blaming God. They start doubting God. We confuse the message and the messenger. We confuse God's people with God. The failures of God's people do not and should not reflect in any way on God. But to assume they do, that's just craziness. But people will make this mistake all the time. And that's why it's so important that you and I, his disciples today, avoid this kind of ministry failure. People are looking to us for help. We are the reflection of God's glory. And when we can't help, people get mad at God. That's a problem. The Father says, if you can help. So Jesus, first thing he says is how long? And the second question, he says, if you can. I mean, he's asking Jesus, if you can. Jesus, who's already cast out 2,000 demons, remember in he sent demons into a pig, into all the herd of pigs. So he's already cast out 2,000 demons there. And then when the woman came and said, you know, my daughter is demon-possessed, can you help her? And he calls her a dog. But he healed that demon. He healed that girl that's demon-possessed without even leaving the dinner table. You know, Jesus, this is not a problem for Jesus. The question, Jesus says, is not whether I have the power. The question is, do you have the faith? That's the issue. I talked about Jesus. He's dragging this out. How long? If, you know, the boy is, he's rolling around in the fire. And Jesus is asking all these questions. We saw the same thing with Jesus in Jairus' daughter. And when he says, my little girl, she's dying. Will you come and help? And what's Jesus do? He goes. But on the way, there's a woman who touches his clothes. And she receives a healing. And Jesus starts talking to her. And Jairus is going crazy, but my girl, I need you now. And Jesus waited for that girl to die before Jesus helped. And just a couple weeks ago, the woman that Jesus called a dog, she came seeking help for her daughter, and Jesus called her a dog. We talked about that. Why does Jesus do this? I think because there's something else going on other than a healing. Jesus is trying to get to the root of the problem, and the root of the problem is our faith. We want Jesus to help us with our problems. What does Jesus want? Jesus wants to develop our trust in him. So we're going after something different than what God is going after. And we got to see that. We got to understand that. You're going through a problem. You're like, why won't God answer my prayer? Why won't this happen? I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. And God's like, no, there's something here I'm going to teach you. I'm going to teach you something. I need to strengthen your faith. Well, verse 24, immediately the boy's father exclaimed, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. The demon isn't the biggest problem. Jesus can cast out a demon in his sleep. But there is a problem here. And it's this man's unbelief, his unbelief. And notice the father's request. I think this is interesting. Verse 22, my son needs help. Help, please help my son, my poor demonized son. And by the time you get to verse 24, just two verses later, help me, help my unbelief. I think that's such a great place for us to see. That's where we need to be. All these things that we're asking the Lord to help us with, Lord, help me get my heart right. All right, and we get to verse 25. I almost skipped the whole healing part, which is really weird because that's the miracle. The miracles are never really about the miracle. It's about the whole story around the miracle. But the miracle itself, Jesus healed this boy. Verse 25, when Jesus saw that the crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the evil spirit. You deaf and mute spirit, he said, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again. In verse 26, the spirit shrieked and convulsed him violently and came out, and the boy looked so much like a corpse that many people said he was dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood up. And I just got a couple observations here. Verse 25, he rebuked the evil spirit. You deaf, you mute spirit, he said, I command you. Jesus is talking now. This is not the disciples, this is Jesus. Jesus is saying, it's me, demon. You get lost. You have no authority here. In verse 26, the spirit shrieked and convulsed violently. You know, when spirits leave, they never do it nicely. You know, they got to be as ugly as they can about it. And in this case, he almost kills this kid. In verse 26, it says the boy looked like he was like a corpse. And some commentators think that maybe Jesus actually raised him from the dead. Maybe he did die, but that's not what it says. It doesn't say that. But Jesus does give this boy, this boy who's been suffering by these demons, gives him a whole new life, completely delivered, fully restored. That's what Jesus can do. And it's at this point, Jesus has he's worked on the Father's faith, and now it's time to work on the disciples' faith. So he turns his attention to the disciples. This is the back page of the outline, Jesus and the disciples. And what it says in verse 28, after Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him privately, because they don't want to do this in public. You know, like, Jesus, why can't we do this? No, so do this privately. Why couldn't we drive it out? And he replied, this kind can only come out by prayer. So a couple more observations here for you. One, this is weird. This kind, he replied, this kind can only come out by prayer. That's so interesting to me. Jesus says their inability was due to the kind of demon it was. Like, there's different species of demons. I didn't know that. And I don't know where you can find that in the Bible. I don't know there's a list in the Bible that says, okay, these types of demons y'all can cast out, these kind of demons you can't cast out. That's just weird. But there's different kinds of demons. And the disciples were able to cast out a lot of demons, but not this kind. This is a special kind of demon for some reason. I think that's very interesting. Don't know what to do with that. I just think it's interesting here. But the other thing I want you to notice here is the need for prayer. Verse 29, he replied, this kind can only come out by prayer. And I've already established, the disciples had been given authority to drive out demons. They had been given success to drive out demons. So this was a power the disciples had already had. Oh, and okay, so think about this here. Think about the different powers that God has given you. And maybe powers, that might be a weird word for you, you know, like we're not supermen or anything like that, but the different abilities God has given you. The Holy Spirit has given you different gifts, different abilities. You think about your natural gifts, the abilities that God has given you to do the things that you can do. And I want to equate this to Michael Jordan, okay? Michael Jordan has this great ability to dunk a basketball. He doesn't have to pray about it. He just does it. Now, me, if I wanted to dunk a basketball, I'd have to pray about it. And I would need divine intervention because I've never been able to dunk a basketball in my life unless the goal is down here or something like that, you know. I don't have that ability, so I would pray. But the problem here is when you have an ability, a special ability, you're gifted in a certain area, you never think about praying about it. It just comes naturally. Could this be the problem with the disciples? They had been doing it on autopilot. They were casting out demons left and right because God had given them that ability. Now they don't think about praying about it anymore. They have become self-reliant. They've become self-dependent. It's in these areas where God gives us the abilities that we can easily drift into the danger of being self-dependent, where we feel like we've got it. We don't need God. So we don't pray. I would relate to this, all you parents out there. When your first child came, you know, your first child, and you couldn't handle it, and you prayed a lot. Lord, help me. Second or third child, sixth child, you know, got it. No big deal. And you stopped praying. That's where the disciples are, and often that can be where we are. We've become self-dependent, self-reliant. Many of our churches today have become self-reliant and self-dependent. We're not relying on the Holy Spirit. We're not praying to God to move among us because we got it. We got it. The boy's father thought too little of Jesus' power. The disciples thought too much of their own power, their own abilities. They knew Jesus had the power, but they weren't depending on that. So then I would ask you, what's at stake? What's at stake when you and I forget to pray? When you and I get out of the habit of praying? When you and I don't depend on God? When we fail to live by faith? When we become too reliant on our own abilities that we forget to pray? When that happens, it leads exactly to what happened with the disciples here. Ministry failure. And then I would ask you to recognize what ministry failure does in this world. When you and I fail, and I'm not talking about me as the preacher, although I know that, you know, preachers in today's world are, you know, we're held to another standard. I get that. But Christians are held to a standard. Rightly so. It's not wrong of anybody to hold us to a standard. We need to be held to a standard. But when we fail that standard, what happens to this world? The people in this world. They don't just get down on you and down on the church. They get down on God. They start doubting God. The stakes of what you and I have been called to are massive, with eternal consequences. So the lesson in all this, we need to pray. And I don't want to just talk about praying. I want us to pray. I want us to be people who depend on God for everything that we do. It's in the valley that we discover there are hurting people in this world. That's not too hard to see, right? It's in the valley that you find out whether you have anything to offer this world of hurting people. That, you know, nobody wants to go down to the valley. We all want to be up on the mountaintop. But God has called us to these valleys. And you see the hurting people, and you see yourself and what you can do and what you can't do. It's in the valley that we discover only Jesus can help this world of hurting people. And it's in the valley that we discover we must be dependent on Jesus if we want to help anybody around us. We must be dependent on Jesus. The reason for the powerlessness was the prayerlessness. And let me just add this here. I was very disappointed this week as I'm putting together the outline, and I pride myself on the pictures that I've used, that I steal from Google. And so I get on Google Images, and I'm looking for a picture for the front of the outline, and I type in man praying. That's what I'm looking for. And 95% of all the pictures came up were Muslims. Now, is that an indictment on Muslims? Is that an indictment on Google? I think it's an indictment on Christians. How come they didn't think of Christian men to take pictures of for prayer? Maybe Christian men aren't known for praying that much. Shame on us. We need to pray. We need to pray. And I'm going to close right now. Well, in just a minute, I want to close. But before I close, there's one more thing I want you to see here. Jesus says this kind can only come out with prayer. And then Jesus didn't pray. What do you do with that? I just thought that's... He says this kind can only come out with prayer, and then he doesn't pray. I think the answer to that was because who are we praying to? We're praying to Jesus. When we ask Jesus to do something, that is praying. The Father went to Jesus and asked Jesus to do something. Who is Jesus? Jesus is God. God doesn't have to pray about it. God does it. You and I, we have to pray about it. We have to tap into God because it's by the power of God that all these things happen.